Hey, I'm Bob Runkle, and for as long as I can remember, I've loved pop culture. Despite the challenges I've faced in my life, pop culture has always been there for me. I love talking to people and being a platform for others to share their thoughts and stories. Because if there's one thing I never get tired of, it's seeing driven, talented, and inspiring individuals follow their dreams, no matter what obstacles are in their way. And I know a thing or two about that. Welcome to the DJ Bob Show. I'm DJ Bob. Roll it.
The DJ Bob Show. Pop culture, past, and present. And now, here's your host, DJ Bob.
From all that, to Austin and Ally, to Figure It Out, to all of his other projects, Kevin Coplow has done it all. And you may know him best as Kevin the Stage Manager from all that. And we cover a lot. But let's start off with his signature phrase. Kevin?
5 minutes.
Kevin the Stage Manager here from all that. Kevin Coplow, how are you?
Great to be here. I am fine. It's great to be talking to you.
This is great. So, you've had quite the career, wouldn't you say so?
I, you know, it's been a long one. I know that about 27 years now since all that started, which was 94. So yeah, according to my math, and you know, I worked in the industry before that too, but as far as producing and writing, that's pretty much where my career started and took off. So
let's talk about that. How did you get into this crazy world of show business?
You know, the old fashioned way. I just kind of, when I was in college, I signed up for, you know, regular, just like PA jobs. I was a big TV fan, and I always wanted to be just at least around a set or something just to see, you know, and I always wanted to be a writer, but it seemed like a kind of very far-fetched dream to me because there weren't, you know, when I was growing up, there was like three channels only, you know, that was it. So there weren't many television shows and many possibilities. So it was definitely something I wanted to do, but I didn't take any courses for it or anything because I didn't see any reason to. But I did used to write when, you know, I was younger, and I used to like Saturday Night Live, and I would always write sketches because that was always like a quick thing. And I really enjoyed doing that. And one day I found out they were having interviews. They were interviewing for this new kids sketch comedy show. And I thought, wow, I have a lot of ideas for that. And that would be perfect for me. So I submitted material and got an interview and got the job. And I went in with a partner, Heath Seifert, and we're still partnering today.
So did any of those sketches that you provided in your audition material, did any of them make it in to the shows?
Yeah, absolutely. We went in with a ton of stuff. We not only wrote about three or four of them, but we pitched maybe, you know, 25 sketches, and a lot of them made it in right away, like the first season. And I believe the first one we did was maybe the complaint department. I don't know if you remember that, but Lori Beth played a horrible employee at a complaint department at some department store. I still am not sure what store it was, but that was the first one we wrote. And then, we submitted a version of Good Burger, a whole bunch of, I believe Detective Dan. We wrote it. We liked the fact of a bumbling detective thought would be fun, and just a bunch of them. Yeah.
So, you know, you bring this up and I kind of want to jog your memory a little bit. Do you remember anything about, you know, the sketch Dream Remote where Ed was born? How he brought in that sort of dude voice.
Yeah, you know, that it's funny because Kel came up with the character of Good Burger, which is interesting. So that was a voice that he did when he was a kid. He used to sing that song, I'm a dude, he's a dude. That song was something Kel sang when he was a kid, and he just started doing that at the beginning of a Good Burger sketch, and it became a thing. You know, I certainly didn't write that. And he, you know, went into, the makeup and the hair and chose a the wig that you see him wearing. And he just put that on, you know. He didn't want to look like Kel. So, and he kind of, and he had that voice down and he adopted it for that character. And it fit obviously perfectly. Everybody loved it. And the rest is history.
I love that. And of course, you know, 20 something years later, it's still prevalent in many people's minds. And it's, I mean, you guys had many iterations of the sketch throughout the show, but a feature film.
Yeah.
I bet you guys weren't expecting that.
No, absolutely not. When we were writing, no, absolutely not. And that was like a dream come true. That was really great. And we were very excited about that. And it worked out really well. And I'm glad that Keenan could be in it as well. Because it definitely, I wish we did more of them, but it was definitely an incredible experience.
So are you familiar with the sequel book that came out?
Yes, I am. Yeah. Absolutely.
Was that supposed to be a script or was that initially just a book? And then,
no, I think it was just floating around. I think Steve Holland actually ended up writing the book, but we used to talk about ideas for movies. And I think one of them was like, I believe it was like Good Burger to Go or something where, making a delivery. And that was just something we couldn't do on the show. So when you think about it, we can't, you know, that's a very single camera idea where Ed is delivering or has to make a delivery or so that there was no movie in the works. So it became a book, you know, but it's a great idea. But it just wasn't time for another movie yet.
Yeah, it's been an idea for years of a Good Burger sequel.
Yeah, I would like nothing more. I mean, Heath and I have put our hat in the ring, and we're, you know, if it ever comes up, we have our pens ready and we're ready to go.
Yeah, you know, it's funny to me because Keenan and Kel were like these just funny kids that you met after, you know, the series had started. What was it like when they got their own series, like a year or so later?
Well, it was interesting because we already knew what a great team they would be. So, I mean, we would see them hanging out together just on the set, and they were incredibly funny together. And it was just a very, very natural progression. And it was a really great, it was just really lucky. It was like lightning in a bottle. You know, you get these two guys and they're so funny together. And Kel is such a great physical comedian, and Keenan is so great with his expressions and reactions, and it just worked really, really well. So it was a very easy transition, to say the least.
So when you are writing any of these, and this is something that I want to know here, was there anything that Standards and Practices or the network was ever like, you can't do that?
Well, you know, we didn't really push the envelope. We didn't try to, but a lot of it's just about like imitatable behavior and what kids are going to do. But we really, there was nothing that we were pitching because we knew it was for kids that wouldn't be too crazy. I mean, we had them doing some wacky things. We had them hanging on the side of, you know, stuck on the side of the Sears Tower. We had them, trying to land planes. I mean, this is something that kids can't really imitate. So that stuff was really great. But, you know, you really don't want to do the general, you know, language and the, you know, so we were always really, really safe about that, believe it or not. There was no, we didn't try to push the envelope, so to speak.
I mean, you know, like when you see something like the first episode of the series, like the screw in the tuna moment, it's like, that is so off the wall and crazy. That,
yeah, well, these are all collaborative efforts too. It's like, I think, you know, somebody wrote in the script, just, you know, Kel reacts. And then little do we know, he starts climbing all over the set and really turned that into an amazing, set piece. It was great. And it just kept getting funnier and funnier as the week progressed. And then when we were shooting, it's what you saw. It was just really great. And Kel did that with a lot of scenes. That's why everything is, you know, it's a collaborative effort when you have really great actors and you just give them something and wind them up. And it's pretty amazing what they do.
So when that show first started, like, was the whole thing with Kel and Kyra, the whole kind of a crush thing, was that always there?
Yes. Actually, we thought it was kind of cute. You know, we thought it was...
I always liked that. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, I did too. It was funny. It was a great dynamic. You know, you want to have different dynamics between all the characters. And the one between the father, and, you know, Kel, Kenan's father and Kel was always great. That was great. And then the mom was always the voice of reason, which was great. And she pretty much took Kel's side a lot, which was, you know, it just... Everything just kind of worked. And the Kyra thing definitely was a planned... Yeah.
I was prepping for this earlier and I was watching some stuff, and the episode that I really connected with, even as a kid, and I don't think a lot of people talk about this one, it's Parental Guidance.
Yes. That, you know what? Classic. That might be one of my favorite. That is, yeah.
Like, what I love about that is it's so like Kenan is so dead set on making this act work, and it all goes to crap.
Yeah, I mean the image, the thought. I mean that all kind of started with the thought of having to hire someone to play your parents, which is already a great jumping off point. And then, you know, we started getting these funny ideas like, wouldn't that be funny? You know, then the principal comes to your house and you forget to take down photographs of your real parent and things like that. And it just, everything, it just had a built-in escalation to it. So that episode for me was really, it was pretty easy to write, and it was just one thing after the other. And I love that kind of thing where it just builds and builds. And then what else was great about that particular episode was that Kenan did it for no reason. He thought he was going to get a bad report and a bad grade, and he did it. It was there. It was so the principal was going to praise him in front of strangers, which was really funny to me.
Yeah, my whole favorite, my favorite idea, not even scene, but my favorite idea in that episode, like, you have this polished theatrical actor, and then you have this actress who doesn't know anything about anything, and it's great.
They got him on a budget. Yeah, Kel found him, right? Yeah, it was very. I mean, you know, that made it. You know, you have to do something with them too. You had to make it so it was just that much harder on Kenan. So. You know, and the mother, I remember the actress not knowing where the bathroom was, asking where the bathroom was in her own house, supposedly. You know, just everything, every time they spoke, both of them, it was just more trouble for Kenan. So, yeah.
One of my favorite moments is like, she goes, Kenan asked something and the mother goes, "Not to my knowledge," and then Kenan goes, "Nothing is to your knowledge." Yeah.
He had had it by then, yes.
Really? And it's like, I found myself rewinding and rewatching it because it's just so good.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember. I do remember that. It was very funny. I liked everything from the actor to the title. I even love the title, the Parental Guy. I just love that episode. One of my favorites. If not my favorite.
And you had such a talented cast. Like, what is it like writing for specific characters? Like, writing for Kel.
Wow.
There's stuff that you always have to do. So can you kind of break that down a little bit?
Well, you know, first of all, writing for such talented cast was... I mean, it was, I hate to say easy, but it was easier than it could be, because they just brought things to life. Like I was mentioning earlier, you know, it's a very collaborative effort. So you know what they're going to bring to the table. So after a few episodes, and we worked with Kel enough to see that his physical comedy was just, you know, was way above anything I've ever seen, especially at his age and everything. So we made sure he had a lot of physical bits, and he just nailed them all and took them to levels we didn't even think he would take them to, like the screw in the tuna, or, you know, when he's just walking upstairs or something. And he was just pretty, he's just brilliant. He's a brilliant, I mean, not only is he a great comedic actor, but just the physicality added to that made it very, very fun to write for him. You know, do you remember the one when they were locked in the bank with the robbers?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Kel just did this thing where he tripped over the stands, you know, the ropes, and was fun, and he just got all caught in them. And I mean, you know, take after take was just funnier. Each one was funnier than the next. It's like 30 seconds of comedy that you don't even have to write. He just does it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that was easy.
Another wacky, goofy one that I recall, because I'm such a nerd, is like the comic book one. And then they all dress it up in like comic book costumes. That was hilarious.
Yes. Yes. And it's funny, that episode, because of that spawned the show that I'm doing now, you know, 20 something years later, because it takes place in a comic book store and that whole comic, you know, convention world. And that always stuck with me. And it always, I love that area. I love the, you know, the whole cosplay of it all, and the arguments over who's stronger than who. And, you know, I really, really enjoy that stuff. So that, you know, that was a very meaningful episode to me.
Yeah. I mean, I can't wait to see this new show. It can be, from what I've heard, it seems to be really having that same sort of sensibility.
Yeah. Definitely. We keep the same sensibilities through all the stuff, you know, we do write. So we've, you know, there was a lot of sensibilities from all that. In Kenan and Kel, you know, Kenan and Kel was almost a series of sketches put together. You know, each scene, you know, we would always think of something we can do that's, you know, physical, or, you know, and it told, you know, emotional stories, of course, but we still managed to get in that sensibility, and we've done that with everything.
So I kind of alluded to it when we first jumped on here, but how did you become Kevin the stage manager and all that? We're kind of going back a little bit, but.
Well, you know, I'm not an actor. I will say that. And I'm sure many people have seen that and they agree that I'm not an actor, but, you know, I went in and we were actually pitching the episodes that we were writing, or the sketches. And we were, you know, I was just, we act them out as we do. Sometimes we just read them out loud. And so I was reading The Father, and Brian Robbins, who was the exec producer on the show at the time, said, you just play it, just play the dad or one of those characters. And I went, really? I'm not an actor. Cause you know, we were shooting in Florida, and there's not a huge acting pool in Florida. At least there wasn't at the time. And it was a very bit part, and it was like in a repairman episode, I believe. And I just did it. I played the dad. I put on a hairpiece and put on whatever clothes that dad would wear. And I just did it. And the next thing I knew, you know, I was performing in front of a live audience, which was really, on top of never being on a stage before, that was pretty crazy. And it just went, it was fine. And then at this one point, you know, we wanted to create a character who the kids could kind of be, I'm not going to say mean, but just, you know, I guess mean too.
They could mess with a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. They could mess with and tease. And so that's where Kevin, the stage manager, came in. And I believe it was only supposed to be for just one episode. You know, it wasn't like a big deal. We just wrote it. And I played that. I had already played a couple of teachers and the dad. And then that's the one that just, for some reason, the first one, I think, was the one where I went in a lion cage and I got... mauled by a lion.
I'm visualizing it. Yeah.
And yeah. And it just, then I, next thing I know, next week, it's like, hey, do we have another one for Kevin? And then the next week, then pretty soon I'm shooting two of those a week. And, you know, we would shoot like a show and a half a week, sometimes two, because it's, you know, that's how you do sketches. And I just, we just felt like I was doing it every day while we were shooting, and it just became a thing. And I'm just glad that the name was Kevin, so I didn't have to.
So was it always that, or was it based on you?
Well, I've been told I'm kind of neurotic and goofy, so probably was a little bit of me in there, but it was just a character, and they named it, we named it Kevin. I don't know how that even happened, but again, I'm glad that it was named Kevin, so I don't have to go around with some character name. So when people say, hey, aren't you Kevin? Yes, I'm Kevin. And it's comfortable.
I mean, and Cal, I know you in a Cal.
Exactly. And then, you know, I'm not, so it wasn't like the same type. It didn't feel like it was some kind of role for me. And, you know, again, I'm not an actor, so I really didn't pursue any acting after that. So I never, that was it. And then I ended up on Figure It Out. And that was just kind of an internal thing for Nickelodeon. So that was a show there. So again, the exec producer on that show was one of the executives at Nickelodeon and asked if I wanted to do the pilot because they considered me a Nickelodeon celebrity. And I guess I was in the building at the time when they were shooting. So I said, sure. And we shot a couple of them. And next thing I know, I ended up on that show. So it was just kind of a very odd trajectory.
So, you know, let's talk about Nick Orlando a little bit. Like, what was the atmosphere like there? What did you like about it?
I loved it. I had never traveled much, and I certainly hadn't been to Florida. And I ended up, so, you know, it's basically the first real writing gig I ever got, and producing gig. And next thing I know, I'm moving to another state, which was odd, seeing that we film every single thing in the world in California, where I'm from, in Los Angeles and Hollywood. But I ended up in Florida, and I couldn't wait. And when we got there, it was better than I ever thought it would be. It was an amazing experience. And because there was, you know, I didn't really have friends there or didn't know, you know, the lay of the land, so to speak, I had a lot of time to hang out and write. And I had, and we got very close with the cast and their families and the crew, because that was it. You know, that's what we had out there. And it was really fun. And everybody luckily enjoyed each other. And the experience was amazing. I mean, I was probably out there like 3 years out of four total. You know, I spent a lot of time out there, and we were on the Universal Studios lot. So, you know, in between shoots and in between, you know, we'd have a break and we'd all run into the Universal Studios and go on a ride, or I don't know how familiar you are with Universal Studios.
Yeah. Like the Back to the Future ride at the time.
Yeah, we would go on the Jaws ride or something, you know, and then we would take a walkie talkie with us in case everybody needed us on the set. You know, it was just one of those things, and before cell phones, of course, but it was a magical place, and it was part of the tour there. So all the kids, so we would look up and there would be kids looking through these, you know, glass partitions and watching us. And
it would be like a fishbowl.
It was, yes. And you forget sometimes, and you turn around, you're like, whoa, oh my God, people were just staring at me that whole time while I was in the booth, you know, like watching the monitors. And it was really interesting. And then we had a live audience as well. And that's how we knew the show was doing really well, because the kids were really, really excited in the audience, and they were really excited to see our actors. And that's how we knew that the show was, you know, had this effect on people.
So what was it like for someone like Vanessa? Because she was juggling. She didn't go and go Island. Do you remember any overlap?
Yeah, we had two. They were shooting Gullah Gullah Island, like right down the hall. So, and we weren't exactly in sync with that show, meaning we weren't shooting at the same time all the time. So it overlapped a little bit, and she could run right back and forth, you know, and she wasn't in as many scenes, which helped that, so she can do both.
And those people are so wonderful over there. I've spoken to both.
Oh, with Gullah? Natalie. Gullah Gullah? Yeah. I knew, you know, we would see them in passing in the hall, and I was always, you know, I would go on their set sometimes, like at night when no one was there, we would just walk around and set. That was a cool show.
And then of course, Figure It Out. Like you have like a bunch of, you have you and then you have Coolio sitting right next to you. Like,
yeah. It was interesting. Yeah. Okay, so I would do, you know, we would shoot three or four, maybe five a day. So I would go, so even when I left Florida, I would fly back to do like a season in a matter of like 3 weeks. So we would do, you know, or a little more than that. So I was usually the guy that was on call in case they couldn't find somebody, or in case somebody had to back out at the last second. So I had to be there at all times. So I would just sit in a dressing room for 5 episodes worth. And I was supposed to be on some of them, of course. So I would be on, out of like, you know, maybe 40 episodes, I was contracted to do, you know, 20, but then I'd end up doing, you know, 10 more because other people were either unavailable. So I loved that role, and I'd just step right in and guess what people did. And it was just really fun.
So what's your favorite celebrity encounter on that show? There were some celebrities that would just hop in for one episode or two, or
That I worked with. It was fun. Well, you know, a lot of it was just fun to see the other Nick kids as well. So because I didn't get to see, you know, like Pete and, the other Pete, like I knew Danny Tamborelli, but we would have guests from other Nick shows. And that was always kind of cool. You know, Shelby Wu, Irene, you know.
Yeah.
And that was always fun just to see all and meet all the other Nick celebrities. So that in itself was like really fun. And then, you know, we would have a lot of sports figures that I really grew up liking, like Dr. J. I don't know if you remember him, but he was, oh boy, that was pretty great. Joe Namath was on there. It was just bizarre. They'd be sitting in my dressing room. It was crazy because they'd have to sequester us together because we weren't allowed to leave our rooms unless we were kind of hanging with each other backstage, because they didn't want us to see any part of the game. Like if they had to march an elephant through, or you heard a goat or something, you know, then that would null and void the whole game. Cause it was really, that was another thing about that Figure It Out, was it was very fair. So we knew nothing. And if we saw one inkling of something, they would either have to cancel whatever they had planned or change it up real quick.
And you had such a good dynamic team in Summer and Jay, the announcer. Like, what are your memories of those two?
Oh, wow. We used to, again, you know, we're kind of all stuck there. So we would go out, you know, to dinner after or something. And it was just, you know, you really couldn't talk about the show for that same reason, because I wasn't allowed to know anything about it. And they were kind of left in the dark too, for that reason. So they really didn't quite know what was going to happen the next day, but they were great. And, you know, Summer, she was such a great host. She was so good. I mean, she was a great enough swimmer, but boy, who knew, you know?
Yeah. And then of course, Jay with his crazy outfits and
yeah, he was perfect.
His mom would come on sometimes.
Yeah. It was really fun. I forget how many seasons it was. I think it was 3 seasons maybe.
And then they did like 2 offshoots or something like that. So it's like, because they were like figuring out Wild Style and Family Style.
I did episodes of all those. Yeah, Wild Style and Family Style. I did some of those. And I never liked guessing what they did and ruining some kid's prize, but you know, it happens sometimes, but it was very, I didn't like doing that part of it. So that's why I would joke around a lot more than I would try to guess for real, because it just felt bad. You know, I mean, you got this little kid up there and they want to win a trip, you know, a cruise or whatever they were doing, for a bike. And
yeah,
you know, I felt terrible.
I was watching one the other day, and they're like, win a boombox. And I'm like, would want the boombox.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it was a great, and another show that, you know, the audience would just go nuts. I mean, they loved that show when they were there, the live audience. That was also part of the tour. So that was really fun.
So while we're on the whole Nickelodeon of it all, I have to ask you, what was the slime made out of? Because there are many different recipes and different concoctions. What do you recollect? What do you remember?
Well, okay. First of all, I do know that the slime has to be edible. So whatever is in it has to be, you know, so it doesn't poison the people.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. Because
when they started making it, it was like whatever was lying around, and then they realized they couldn't do it.
That yes, you're probably right. I'm sure they figured that out very soon, like very quickly. Like, hey, let's make this so it's edible and it doesn't stain everything it touches. So it probably didn't have that much dye. But it varied. Sometimes it would be like creamy, sometimes it would be chunky. So then I found out they were using, like, certain times they would use applesauce. Other times they would use like a pudding. Other times it was more of like a gel with a pudding. And And sometimes they would make it really cold. So when it hit you, you'd react not only to the slime, but to the coldness of it. And that used to really jar me. You know, I guess it's better than making it boiling hot, right? but it was pretty, and it would just get everywhere. You know, we would wear overalls and somehow it would just still get all over me. And I would just find it just hours later.
So what was the longest duration of time that you still had slime?
I'd be there the whole day and I go, wow, didn't I take a shower? I was like, didn't I take a shower 3 episodes ago? You know, it would be like, you know, that's like 4 hours ago. And I stare at it some more, you know, it's like in my fingernails or my, you know, not my hair, but that never happened. But yeah, it was definitely find it. And you try to keep it out of all the clothes that you wear. So, you know, because again, we were wearing overalls, but it would get down your the back of your shirt. And that was always really hard. So it would be on my back.
I mean, I've always wanted to be slimed even to this day. Just for the experience of it all. Like it's great.
Yeah, they had a part of the tour, they actually had a guy, they had a lab where these two people,
the Gag Kitchen, I know about it. Yeah. Kitchen,
and they would make and they would slime guests and they showed how the Gak and the slime was made, I guess. Not Gak, but and that was pretty cool too. So and I don't think that was the same stuff they were dumping on us for some reason, because one had to be on TV, I guess. So they had to show better. And, you know, again, sometimes they make it cold, sometimes, you know.
I love it. I just, Nickelodeon must still bring you fond memories, even if, you know, you're still working with them. Like, it's a cool environment to be in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it trickles down in it and, all, you know, so every employee there, I mean, everybody, it's just fun to work at and be at Nickelodeon. And it always has been. And they know, you know, it's a place for kids and it's pretty much run by, you know, immature writers and like myself, you know, and executives who know what they're doing. They know what kids want to see.
So what is it like when half of your writer staff and your crew grew up with you? That has to be interesting.
In what way? What do you mean? Half the writers or the...
No, I'm saying most of the people that work on your show now, I bet some of them grew up watching you.
Oh, that. Yeah. When we rebooted, some of the writers and producers, they were all fans of the original show and they were just so happy to be there as well. And then, I think it might have been kind of cool for them. And I think it's better when, you know, we had some of the old actors on too, because, you know, Kel came back and Lori Beth and Elisa and Keenan. And that was, I would say, a little more thrilling for them. So, yeah, that would have been quite an experience.
Yeah, that it just the thought of how familial all that still is. It shows.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there was nothing like it. You know, they didn't have, and at the time too, there wasn't much children's television. So it was like us and a few shows on Disney. There really wasn't, Disney hadn't exploded yet and done any, you know, had many shows. And
yeah.
And Nickelodeon was pretty limited. We had, you know, 6 or 7 shows maybe. And it wasn't like a 24-hour thing. So it was really Saturday nights and I think, you know, Sunday afternoon and Friday night. And, you know, and now it's just, there's
all
so
the time.
Much so yeah, which is still great, but it's all the concentration was on.
It was appointment television. And that's the thing that I miss.
Yeah. I that must've been really fun. I would have watched that when I was a kid. I loved what we were doing and I loved the sensibility and the stuff made me laugh and it still makes me laugh. I love physical humor. I like silly things. You know, I don't need to get a lesson every time I'm watching something. So I appreciated what we were doing and I appreciated that they let us do what we did.
So what was the transition to Disney like for you and Heath?
You know, it was pretty, I would say, natural, because we did get to take over a lot of our, what we like to say, some of the sensibilities we had at Nick. We just took it on the road and went to Disney. I think a lot of this stuff, you're talking about Austin and Ally. That was the show we did there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a combination of the zany and some serious stuff. We went a little more, we tugged the heartstrings a little more and told like deeper stories, but at its core, it was still our sensibility, and it was still wacky enough for us that we loved writing that as well.
And that show was very successful. It was huge. It ran for like a number of years.
Yeah. We did 87 episodes. And, you know, one of the reasons that was so successful, again, it's a collaboration. The kids, the actors, I shouldn't even call them kids, but the actors were so amazing. It was, you know, all four of them, you know, the core four of that, you know, Laura Morano and Ross Lynch and Rainey Rodriguez and Caitlin Worthy. They were just unbelievable.
And it's so interesting because you would think, you know, that was just around the time that I would have stopped watching Disney Channel and all that stuff. But I kept watching it because it was so good.
That's good to hear. I you know, a lot of people watch that. And it was another show where we got to do a live audience. And those were like electric. Like, those were my favorite nights. Whenever we could have a live audience for that show, it was just amazing. And the actors just fed off it. The audience loved it. And there was nothing like it. It was great. I mean, we did, I think, every single Kenan and Kel, except when we did that movie, of course, but we had live audience for them. And there's just something where the actors just elevate when they have a live audience. And I saw it in that show, and I saw it in Austin Alley.
And, you know, because you and I have hung out on Zoom previously. Yeah. And one of the things you were telling me about was the Make-A-Wishes that you would do for Austin and Alley.
You know, that's a pretty great thing that both Nickelodeon and Disney arrange. They really, it's pretty amazing. That it means that much to some kids that when they're having, you know, medical issues or something, they choose to go watch certain shows that they like and meet their heroes. And it was great to be a part of that. And pretty much, I would say every live audience, we would have someone or tape days. Cause you know, we also shoot on Thursdays and, or rehearsals, you know, we would have at least one, you know, Make-A-Wish kid that would come down, which is a great foundation. And it was great to see that we were making so many kids happy, you know, when their lives weren't that great.
And it's so funny. It's so interesting you say that because, you know, I'm not as, you know, challenged as some of them are, but the stuff that you guys created, whether it be in the 90s or Austin and Ally or even your new stuff, it's like, you're like a safe place for me and many others who may not have the experiences that others do.
Yeah, that's really great to hear. And I'm glad that you know, because that was our goal, to just entertain kids. And no matter where they, you know, no matter where they were, what they were doing, they could just put down their stress. Or if they were having problems, be it medical or just at home or at school, and just make them laugh, you know? And that's great to hear that you had that effect, that we had that effect on you. That's great.
And now we're talking. I consider us friends now. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would, you know, if we're allowed to have people come to our set, I'd love to have you come down. It'd be great. You'd love to see television made, right?
That'd be so fun. Yeah. This is a tricky question, but I'll throw it at you because I can.
Is there math involved? No?
No, there's a reason why I barely passed math in high school.
All right. Fire away.
So what is your proudest line you've written? Is there something that you wrote?
Whoa.
That
Whoa.
You're like, holy crap, that's funny.
You know, the one that sticks with me is in the Good Burger movie. And the only reason is because I've seen the movie a few times and I can remember it. And that's when Kel was on the roof and we had a heart-to-heart moment between Kel and Dexter, the character that Keenan was playing. And Keenan was saying how he hasn't seen his father in forever. And Kel said, yeah, I don't see my father either. He said, I don't remember what my father looks like either, but at least I get to see him every day. Which I thought was...
And it's like, he's trying so hard.
Yeah. Yep. And it was a great way. The reason I liked that line is because I barely remembered it. But the reason I liked it was it broke this kind of tense, dramatic moment. And that's what made it great for me. That's why I thought it was funny.
You know, while we're on the Good Burger movie, whose idea was it to write, can somebody get me to the hospital? I think I broke my ass.
that sounds to me like a Dan Schneider line for some reason, because I don't know, that makes me laugh too. I don't know, probably, you know, it's it was a long time ago,
like just the concept of Ava going
yeah
crack me up.
Yeah, and the fact of what a great sport Abe Vigoda is to say whatever you put in front of him, that's the magic there.
I love that. Yeah.
A funny guy.
That movie, say what you will, it gets a lot of like making fun of, but it's not like one of my friends told me something about these movies from this time period or earlier or later. Not everything is Citizen Kane.
No, we didn't. You know, we didn't set out to entertain the adults and the trolls, and we just wanted to make a goofy, funny, silly movie based on a character that was already silly, funny, and goofy.
And it's such a good film, and it's still, I mean, I just bought the Blu-ray of it recently. That just came out, and I finally picked that up, and to see that in HD and not in cruddy quality makes me happy.
It was a really fun movie. I haven't seen it in a little while.
We got to get you back on to do a commentary.
Yeah, you know, they never did it. Well, they don't really have DVDs anymore, so they don't do that. And they never asked, but that would have been fun.
Yeah. One of my absolute favorite moments from anything you've ever done, and it's so off-center, it's from the Keenan and Kel TV movie.
Two heads are better than
none. Yeah. Like where, you know, they're in this museum and there's a monkey and he starts playing chopstick. And then he goes into Stevie Wonder Superstition. And then he's so... I loved it as a kid.
Yeah.
It's like
that was a good one.
Like, it's like the oddball humor is just apparent.
Well, yeah, I think the hardest part about that was getting the rights to using that song. And somehow we did. I don't know how, but it worked. And I was really happy that we could use that. Because that was, you know, that could have not been that great. But yeah.
But it totally added to it, and I loved it.
Yeah. That's funny.
So, as a showrunner now and as a creator, what do you look for when you hire, you know, writing staff?
You know, we want diversity. We want different voices, different ages, different experiences. And then we want kind of the same sensibilities we have. We want to find those people, but also some different takes. We don't want to hear the same lines we would think of. So, you know, we look for a lot of different types of comedy. I mean, I don't know, you know, how to pinpoint exactly what it is, but you'll know it when you read it.
And that's really important. And when you talk about different voices, there's something I want to bring up here, and that's inclusion, whether it be, you know, disabilities or race or anything like that. Like, that is something that people are more conscious of more now than ever. So,
well, I mean, you know, All That was always a very diverse show. Now, it was, you know, we represented a lot of different types of kids.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, you know, that was always really great. And it's great when it goes to the writing staff as well. So you do want to have, again, you want to have authentic voices and you want to have diversity all across the board, wherever you are, directors, everything.
So to wrap this up, what does children's television mean to you?
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I never had to grow up while I was writing it. I still kind of think like a kid, and then luckily. And I think it's come a long way because there's so many avenues now for kids' TV. You know, there used to be just Nick and Disney. Now it's all over the place, which I think is great. And there's a lot more, you know, there's a lot of variety out there for kids. And again, I think it's great to make kids laugh. And I'm into the, you know, the comedy of it all. And I think that that's the best part about it, is that kids can just let go and just watch something and not be, you know, taught something every minute of their day. And just, if they want to learn something, okay, but just make them laugh and it's fun.
And I just want to thank you for making me laugh for several decades. And
you are very welcome.
So game to do this, and you're a friend of our show now. I really appreciate this.
Oh, well, it's great. And it was great meeting you a while back. And I hope we maintain our friendship. You got to keep in touch. And I'll be constantly monitoring your podcasts. And I hope I said just something helpful and interesting.
The DJ Bob Show. Pop culture, past and present.